You're listening to the Heroes Podcast Network.
Hello, everyone. Happy New Year and welcome back to Red Shirts and Runabouts. This is episode 55 and our first episode of 2019. I am Derek, one of your regular hosts, and I have with me my two hosts who have been journeying for a couple of months, Zach.
Hey.
And Ray.
Hello.
And guys, this will be your last one for a little while, at least.
Yeah. A little bittersweet.
So for those who don't know or who haven't been following with us, my other host, Greg, will be joining me back again starting next week as we kick off Star Trek Discovery Season 2 discussions. He's taken a little bit of a leave of absence and will be coming back with me next week. So Zach and Ray will get a little break from this show to work on other things. But
dun, dun, dun.
So today, this week, whatever, we are talking about the fourth and final Short Treks of season one of Short Treks, I guess, if you could call it that. It's The Escape Artist, which is the Harry Mudd episode starring Rainn Wilson and directed by Rainn Wilson.
Man of many talents, Dwight.
He is. He is the man of many talents. Not a whole lot of news to talk about before we kick things off because everyone's just getting ready for Discovery Season 2. One thing I did do, though, is I made a poll on Twitter under the @RedShirtsPod Twitter handle asking people what they're most excited for Season 2 of Star Trek Discovery. And I had a few answers there available for people, and you could respond with others. And so I was curious, guys, what are you two most looking forward to in Discovery Season 2?
That's a lot of twos. too many twos.
I want to know what the hell the Red Angel is. Like, I get so drawn into overarching, like, what is this? The big mystery. So, like, I'm going to be watching it just to figure out what the hell that is. But close second is sexy Spock time.
Sexy, like, Spock. Is he sexy because of the beard?
No.
Or, okay.
No, Spock has always been a very sexy character to me.
Okay. It's Spock time.
Yeah.
He's just always sexy.
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Leonard Nimoy, Zachary Quinto, and I forget this gentleman's name, but like they're very attractive men as is, and then the character of Spock is attractive to me, so I am looking forward to him.
Okay.
Yeah. God, it's hard to pick what my favorite thing is about season, or what I'm looking forward to most about season two.
It would be really hard to pick your favorite thing about season
two. Yeah, my favorite thing. Guys, I'm from the future, let me tell you. Season two, it's a trip. You're going to have a good time with it. The thing I'm most looking forward to, honestly, I think it's just being back with this cast. I rewatched season one right after it aired. Like, I watched episode week to week, and then at the end of that, I watched it all just, like, binging. And it was a better experience, and I'm in the process now of rewatching it to get ready for season two. And I don't know, I'm excited to be back with this group of people. I'm, you know, looking forward to Spock as well. I'm excited.
Cool, so Spock was the number two answer on our poll. That's the second most thing that they're excited for. A couple other things we had on there that were not number one. More Michael Burnham.
Yeah. You
know, now that she's an officer again, right? Mm-hmm.
She
had her redemption arc. She's ready to roll.
It looked like she's making out with Ash Tyler.
I saw that.
And oh my god, I shipped them so much.
Well, that made me happy because they end season one and they're like splitting ways, and like you're under the impression they may not see each other for a while. So I'm like, oh, they're getting together.
Man, we didn't do like a spoiler warning or anything. I am so sorry if we ruined anything for season one of Discovery for you. But if you're watching Short Treks, I assume you've watched season one of Discovery.
If you're listening to this podcast, you've probably watched all of Discovery. If not, you know.
Spoiler warning.
Spoiler alert.
Another thing is someone is really excited to kind of see the balance of the faith versus science, because this thing has a faith aspect to it. This idea of like
it is called the Red Angel.
Right. Yeah.
Like just that name has a religious connotation to it.
I get that. That's cool. That was one of my favorite things about DS9, which is maybe my favorite show of Star Trek, is just the faith versus science debate that show engaged in regularly and never really gave a definitive answer on, which was cool.
Exactly. So, I mean, I'm looking forward to that, too. That's Star Trek at its best is when it questions where those lines are and if yeah. they really are lines or if there's just right. the same thing seen from different perspectives, like maybe wormhole aliens, for example.
Yes, exactly.
You know, so I'm really looking
the
forward
Red
to that,
The Red Angel
too.
Is a wormhole alien. But
that would be interesting if I'd it was okay one of that. The prophets. Yeah. That would be very interesting.
The problem with big live screen adaptations is they want to favor action over substance, and mm-hmm. you know, Marvel could have the religious debate. They have Tony Stark, who is clearly an atheist,
mm-hmm.
and
Thor, who is clearly a god.
And Thor, like the Asgardians that mix magic and science. Uh-huh. Science is just magic that they've already figured out and we haven't, so you know, they could have really great debates and they just choose not to.
Well, you don't have time
there's,
in a movie.
I know. There's right. no room right. for it.
I mean, right. even when Star Trek did do it in the movies, you ended up with the slower
mm-hmm.
conference room scenes that I love, but the average moviegoer is not going to pay $15 to go see.
Right. Well, a bunch right. of slower conference room stuff gets us the Star Wars prequels where,
that's
right. you know,
they're gonna be too much. Yeah,
yeah, there's too much well, bureaucracy.
And I'm a fan of the JJ films, but they are different, and I do think that Star Trek is stronger in a serialized week-to-week format because it does the Star Trek in and of itself needs to be more philosophical, and mm-hmm. and having the week-to-week episodic content lends itself to that.
Sorry, I just saw the thing you posted, Derek. So the number one answer that we got on the Twitter poll happens to actually be also my choice, which is Captain Pike. Mm. I am really stoked to see Captain Pike. Anson Mount looks just like he's really into it. He looks the part. He seems excited about the part. He's yeah. bought into it himself. He's been a Trekkie, you know, his whole life as well. So he's very excited about this. And Pike is an interesting character that, you know, if you've seen The Cage or you've seen it chopped up in the menagerie, there's always been some questions about who this guy is.
Right.
And we never really got to know. And, you know, putting Discovery 10 years before the TOS that we know does mean that somebody else is in command of the Enterprise. And something I, you know, a lot of people mentioned during season one, and I'm sure some of us did, including myself, was that, you know, why wouldn't the Enterprise show up at some of these battles, being one of the supposed 12 Constitution class ships that are like the ships
right.
of Starfleet? You just figured it's a matter of time, and they were just avoiding it, and it was becoming obvious. So this is really cool. I'm really excited to see it. I want to see what Pike is all about. Tangentially, I'm very excited to see number one and hope that she actually gets a name in canon.
Yeah, I hope so. I really do.
There's rumors that the two of them are in a relationship.
Mm,
and
I don't like that.
Part of me just loves it when really attractive actors get to make out. Like, it's very voyeuristic of me, but I'm not okay with that. If that's where they go, just internet rumors. I hope that's not it, because I mean, not every group of people have to be dating.
Right.
You know, it doesn't need to be like that.
It's an interesting conversation because
it's also that conflict of interest, like,
well,
for the authority.
It's inappropriate. It's part of why on Voyager, spoilers for Voyager, that Chakotay and Janeway never get together during the show.
They don't?
The books are a separate conversation, but you know, it is inappropriate since they're the two top officers, right?
Right.
On the flip side, if we take rank out for a moment, it is interesting to think about the extension of the Cage. Because in the Cage, Pike doesn't really like having women on the bridge. And he actually makes the comment about how number one is different. She's not like other women, right? Because she's, you know, she's portrayed as more logical. She's portrayed
she's a hard ass.
As a hard ass. Very yeah. level-headed, right? She's in control, you know, etc. So it would be interesting to see if that evolution of their relationship from he's okay with her being on the bridge because she is what he actually is looking for in somebody.
Yeah.
And maybe he didn't realize that at the time, because this is after The Cage.
Right.
Right. The Cage happened a few years ago. So it would be interesting to see if there's an evolution there. It would not be an appropriate relationship, but right. it doesn't mean it doesn't happen.
There are pros and cons to both. I think in this case, I don't like it. And I'm not entirely sure why. I think I need to see more of their relationship. I actually think I would approve more of Janeway and Chakotay. They were out by themselves for years in a quadrant. And like, I feel like when you're in that close quarters with somebody you respect and you trust, you have a friendship, and then you're also physically attracted to, it just makes sense. But if you're not, and you get to see all these other people and you're exposed to other people, then it doesn't really make sense. Propriety takes priority, in my opinion.
Yeah. No, I get that.
I think we're all in agreement on that. Now, I don't want to spend too much time on this because
next week
when Greg returns, Greg and I will be catching up and we will be talking a bit about Star Trek Discovery, doing a bit of a season one recap combined with some anticipated stuff for season two. So that'll be next week's episode. So let's go ahead and move on to Short Trek's episode 4, The Escape Artist, clocking in at just over 16 minutes, makes it the second longest of the four.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you guys think? Initial thoughts? Anything you want to start on?
It was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was definitely fun.
As Star Trek is a very serious show, and I liked this short because it didn't take itself too seriously. So it was a fun departure from what I've come to expect from Trek.
I just know that when it was announced that Harry Mudd was going to be part of season one,
mm-hmm.
the three of us were a little, like, groaning.
Yeah.
Because in TOS, he is an awful character. He's difficult to just stand through those, what, two episodes he's in? One episode? Like,
well, no, eight. He's actually, so if you include the animated series, he's actually in five.
Oh, okay.
Five total episodes.
But he's exasperating.
He's the most recurring character who's not part of the main cast.
He's a bit insufferable, though.
Right. But what Rainn Wilson has done with him has made him intriguing.
Mm-hmm.
Still insufferable, but in a completely different way. Like, yeah. I want to know more about him. I wouldn't mind a whole, like, two or three episode tangent where we just follow him because he's interesting.
He is. Rainn Wilson is a delight.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first off, he's killing that role.
He really is.
Okay, let's put
and
that.
And I never thought
bed.
I was going to see him be anything other than Dwight. I seriously thought
I don't think about
that
the
was
all,
going
though.
To be his role, and mm-hmm. no,
he is great. So I've been nervous about having Mudd return to Star Trek since the rumors of Into Darkness's villain possibly being Mudd.
Well, everybody just wanted Nick Frost because Simon Pegg's in there.
Right.
And Nick Frost would also kill the role.
Yes.
He really would.
He'd take a little bit different spin on it, but it'd be good.
It'd be closer to the original version, I would think.
It would be.
The problem with the original version in today's world and what Rainn Wilson does to fix the character, in my opinion, is he's gone from this kind of bumbling, buffoonish type guy to really somebody formidable who can pull shit off.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Who, the character is an actor. Mm-hmm. He's a liar. He mm-hmm. is deceitful. He comes up with good shit on a whim. And the plans, what this episode proves, the plans that he concocts are amazingly complicated.
They are. Well, and even like, I mean, we should probably give a spoiler alert, but like, even just like the very premise of this plan and the way this whole episode unfolds, it's kind of brilliant.
I didn't see it coming.
I didn't either. No. Well,
so, okay, yeah. So, you know, spoilers, all that kind of stuff. The title is even a misdirection.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's not escaping from anything. He's not even there.
Right.
Right? He's setting this all up. Mm-hmm. Like, it's almost like a mini Ocean's 11, Ocean's 8 kind of heist that he's doing.
Yeah.
Almost in reverse in some way. So
it's so brilliant. I mean, like, marketing the fact that, like, he is a wanted man and, like, making money off of, like, selling copies of himself. That's good.
Yep.
So I think my favorite part of that is, you know, at the end you get to see some of the other incarnations of him. And then you get to see them on the ship and everything like that. And it mm-hmm. is straight up the episode I Mudd,
yeah.
where he makes all of the androids and mm-hmm. he has the one of his wife,
mm-hmm.
right, and everything. And so, like, he's stuck on this planet, essentially held captive by his own robot creations, and this is a twist on that.
Yeah.
Right? It's the same kind of technology, Right, but earlier.
Yeah.
Right, because we're going to see, obviously, this is, you know, 10 years before
we're going to see it and bite him in the ass later. Right. But we're seeing it work out for him real well at the moment.
Which is cool, because it shows that while maybe it failed for him a decade later, it was a good idea at the time. Right. And it worked and made him a ton of money.
It did, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So let's talk about where things kick off. So, right, he's... so. He being the mud that we're with for the majority of the episode,
mm-hmm.
Is held captive, right, by this alien type creature that looked like Princess Leia's character.
It did. It really did. It sounded like her even.
Yeah.
I wonder if that was intentional.
I don't know. She almost looked like maybe this is the Discovery timeline's take on the Breen. Right, because the Breen also were kind of knocked for having that type of look as well, and this is, I guess, an update. You could call this an updated version of that, which I guess is fair. And then, and I'm sorry, I'm slightly drawing a blank here, that guy was a Tellarite. Is that what he was supposed to be?
I'm assuming
they said it.
Did they? Okay, I missed it.
I'm just like, I don't know, that look didn't scream Tellarite to me, but, you know, that aside, I agree. You know, whatever works, I guess. So how do you guys feel about their interactions between the two of them?
I mean, what?
I was trying to think of something. I don't know.
I don't know. It seems very common to interact with Mud. Like, I feel like I would be that angry, that annoyed, that wanting to just completely win over. And I, because of the title, I seriously thought he was going to convince him to let him go.
Yeah, it was definitely a bait and switch, I guess. And I find their interactions to be refreshing, because we're used to dealing with characters who take themselves very seriously and are interacting professionally, or if they hate each other, they're a conflict. So we're used to, like, the angry conflict, we're used to, like, the peaceful cooperation. But to see two people, like, interact on a Star Trek show that are just annoyed with each other, like, that's not all that common. But, like, you get it, because Mud is annoying, but they play into that, and they don't tiptoe around that part of his character. And it's fun.
Because I like how the Tellarite's kind of, like, leaning into it. Like, he's like, maybe he's thinking about it, and he's like, does that line ever work on anybody?
Yeah.
I thought it was a good moment.
He was a good foil for Mud, and that he was not having any of his bullshit.
Yeah, it was kind of nice, because it's not, they're not really dealing with the Federation,
mm-hmm.
right? And one of the knocks that Starfleet gets a lot is that maybe everyone's a little too perfect. And that's something Discovery has actually done pretty well.
I agree, yeah.
Change that. But still, there's all these regulations and rules, and they're so professional.
As a side note, in regard to the Tellarite, whatever, this episode did the prosthetics and makeup very well, because the Tellarite, the shorter alien from one of the flashbacks, like,
and they, the Orions.
And the Orions, yeah, they all looked fantastic.
I agree. So okay, so let's talk about some of those other aliens then. So the
it gives us two other scenarios where he's been captured.
Mm-hmm.
Or three other scenarios.
There was a Klingon.
Yeah, there was that brief Klingon encounter.
Right.
The Klingon foot stomp.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so let's talk about the Orion one, because I think that was probably my favorite.
Same.
Yes.
So,
everything about that changed. I could electrocute 90% of the men I come in contact with on the internet, because I swear they just make thirsty ass comments like that. And I've never wanted to just throw a ball of electrocution at somebody so badly before. So to see her do that.
That's fair.
She was my hero.
That's fair. The jail cell he was in was super reminiscent of a few cells that, like, Kirk, Spock, Bones, some combination of, get stuck in a few times in the original series.
Uh-huh.
You know, like Cat's Paw, for example.
Yeah.
Not one of TOS's best episodes, but one I know really well, because as a kid, I watched that one a lot.
It's one of the best worst episodes.
It's a Halloween episode, actually. It's Star Trek's only, like...
Well, that was the interracial kiss, too, wasn't it?
No.
Oh, no, I'm thinking of another time where they were controlled by another alien. Honest mistake.
It happens so much.
Honest mistake. But yeah, no, the Orion scene was really fun, right? Like, I liked that there's a camera in the cell. Like, yeah. This is, why wouldn't there be? This is the future.
Yeah. Right? Well, that's something that Star Trek never discusses. And I think we've talked about this before. Like, there are so many, like, conflicts and, like, weird things that come up on even Discovery where it's like, wasn't there a camera in the room that would have really quickly solved this whole thing? But it's a plot device. It's a plot device to not fucking have cameras in any of the goddamn rooms, apparently.
And I like how they turn that on its head, yeah. And she's like, you realize we have cameras in here, right? Like, he's such an idiot.
Yeah.
And the guy tries to cover for it, which I thought was really funny. I almost had him tricked that right. I was going to help him. Get out of here.
It also kind of goes back to what Enterprise did, where they show that the females run Orion.
That was a cool callback too, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. I will say I'm having a harder time with Discovery's Orion seeing the green tint. And maybe it's just the lighting because it's so dark in that scene.
Yeah.
But on the guy, I didn't notice he was an Orion until she came in.
The whole planet we saw last season,
yeah,
it was incredibly dim lit, and maybe it was just perpetually night. I don't know how long they were on there. The passage of time was a little weird,
mm-hmm.
but yeah. And then they went into like the opium den and whorehouse, yeah. And that was also very dimly lit. No, yeah. So it,
you don't want, yeah. But seeing, you know, their to makeup be fair, you're going into a whorehouse or an opium den. You don't want to see around. It's better when the less you can see.
You don't need to see your shame.
Yeah. When you have aliens with different skin tones and what they are is important, you know, yeah. You'll be able to see. So.
I agree.
I could see her because she was standing in the doorway. The lighting was a little bit better. And,
yeah.
You know.
Sure.
So that was a fun scene. I really like that. Klingon scene was fairly short. He basically just gets kicked in the face.
Mm-hmm.
The other alien, the third alien, which, I mean, I don't know what species she was supposed to be. It looked like maybe a little bit of Krall from Beyond. Looked a little,
I thought that too.
You know, maybe, I don't know, something
little,
else.
A little Krall and a little, oh God, I'm terrible. Why can't I remember her name from Beyond?
Jayla?
Jayla. Little Krall. Like, in some of the, like, just the, there was a lot of, like, divots, but, like, just the general, like, structure of her face looked shorter. I mean, she was shorter, so, like, it's not the same thing, but, like, it just, I don't know.
So I'm not sure what she was, necessarily, but, you know, they're definitely putting money into these aliens, so that's good.
Yeah.
But she, like, we did get to see a lot of her personality, and she was incredibly feisty and spunky, and she held the camera very well.
Yeah, it kind of made me sad that we'll probably never see her again.
Yeah.
But maybe we'll see more like her. We'll get to know what her species is and people.
And maybe we will see her again. Maybe she's the Armin Shimmerman of her kind, right. The Ferengi, and we'll see her show up again later.
Sure, sure. No, I do like that this Discovery is doing a very good job of changing what previous Star Trek shows have done, which is the previous shows have basically all picked like some alien to be their main alien.
Yeah.
Right. And then that's the one you see all the time. Now in the original series, it was a budgeting thing, mm-hmm. right? So you got the Vulcans a lot because they were cheap, right? The Romulans were a little, you know, and Klingons were not much more sophisticated than that, you know?
Yeah.
So to see all these different types of aliens, I mean, in this one 16-minute episode, we have at a minimum a Klingon and a Tellarite, two Orions, and then this other alien woman, we don't know which species she is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Which is just, that's a lot for an episode, let alone a 16-minute short. Yeah. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, there's, because of budgeting reasons, because it's a modern show, like, they're able to greater exhibit diversity, which is fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you know, this episode couldn't have been super cheap to make, because I don't believe that bridge set for Krit's ship had existed for any other purpose.
Probably not.
So I think they had to build that. Obviously, everything at the end was done on Discovery set. That's, you know, that's what that was. You know, and then we have a new ship at the very end, Mud's ship or station.
Yeah.
It was a ship. It was a big ship that they showed.
It wasn't a beach. He'd been lying about that, at least.
Well, you know, he's still working to get the money so he can go to the beach.
Right, right, right. But he had the cocktails.
He had the cocktail.
That was important.
The jippers.
The jippers. Thank you, yeah.
Yeah.
Did either one of you want to try that? Because it had, like, two pieces of starfruit in it.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
really good for a cocktail.
I would try it, yeah.
Of course you would, you lush. Like,
It looks amazing.
It did.
I need to know what it is first.
I'd rather
try a Rectigino personally. Really some Klingon coffee.
If I could start my day off with Rectigino, I would.
Why do I feel like Rectigino just has blood in it?
Like, it might. The blood of your enemies. It gives you energy to get through the day.
They have blood pie.
They do.
And blood, blood wine. And caffeine. And blood that's wine. It.
Yeah. So the Klingons like their blood, but Rectigino is really just coffee.
Yeah. It's like, sure it's like a quadruple espresso.
Sure it is.
There's as many
and
shots
Romulan
as...
ale isn't just a whole bottle of blue curacao.
Right.
No, it's more like UV blue. Right.
That's dangerous.
That's nasty.
That's so gross.
But that's what it looks like, though.
It does.
Yeah.
I always assume that, like, Rectigino just had, like, a shot for every superfluous organ that Klingons had.
So a lot of shots.
Of espresso,
yeah. Even more now that we know the Klingons do have two penises.
They do, yeah.
Oh my god, do they?
Oh, yeah. You're not remembering from last season of Discovery where the Klingon is urinating outside and there's two streams.
Uh-huh.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that was a thing.
Oh,
I think it was
man.
The last episode. It was like a blink and you miss it sort of thing.
They confirmed that they have two penises, but the women still only have two breasts. They don't have double the breasts.
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah, they're not udders.
Like... But they have double everything else, apparently. Double hearts and lungs, double penises.
We don't know about the nipples. Maybe they've got multiple mammary glands per breast.
That's interesting.
Well, no, because we saw...
Oh, we did. Yeah. That's right. I tried to block that from my memory.
You
that
don't
was
get, like,
an
a good
intense
look.
Scene.
I mean, you know.
You get an overhead look of...
Yeah. Mary Cheapos.
Laurels.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I think we need to know if there's two... vagina holes.
Like, yeah, I would imagine
that's necessary.
Yeah,
like, there probably would be, like, evolutionarily, why wouldn't
right?
That,
like,
you know? Because then, like, what happens? Like,
or
like,
you get DP'd by the same dude.
DP'd by the same dude,
I guess that's
or,
possible,
like,
yeah.
You have to decide, like, which one of my dicks needs more love tonight? Like,
uh-huh. See, this conversation has gone off the rails.
It has.
As it were.
It's gone
but
off
these
the
are
rails,
important
perhaps.
Questions we need.
All right, let's divert this back.
No, we might as well just call it now. We tanked it.
That's as good as 2019 is going to get, I think.
Yes.
Who from Discovery would you guys have sex with?
It's a decent list, probably.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah?
How much time you got?
How all much right. Time you got? Top three.
Are we including short treks?
I feel like, yeah, why not?
Okay.
I feel like your number one is Tilly.
That's my number one.
I don't know that she's number one. I really would have to sit down and think about it. Tilly's great. I don't.
Tilly's my number one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tilly's your number. I'd have to think about it.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm posing this question.
I know. I'll have to think about
Tilly,
it and get back to you. I think
Tilly, Michael Burnham, and Laurel. Yeah, I'd try Klingon. I would totally.
Yeah, Laurel would be up on the list for sure.
Yeah.
All right.
But I think that's because Mary Chifo's also awesome.
She is. I adore her.
Yeah, she's really a lot of fun to follow on social media.
Yeah, she's super tall. She could take me in a manly fashion. It's fine. It's fine.
See, for me, it's got to be Ash Tyler. Like,
yeah.
He's an objectively handsome dude.
Not Saru. No.
I love Doug Jones so much.
Lady in the Water.
I feel like... I would pick his Shape of Water character before Saru.
Okay.
He
enough.
Looks slimy as Saru.
Does he?
And you don't want the threat game to come up during sex. No one needs that.
Death.
You think he looks slimy as Saru. In the Shape of Water, he's literally an amphibian.
Right, but then I know
like,
that the
expected.
Sliminess is because of the water. Like, why is he dry and still slimy looking?
Yes. That's a valid question.
Alrighty. Okay.
See?
Moving on.
There's also the really hot navigator. Like,
yes.
He is very attractive.
I'm trying to remember.
I will find him.
Yeah, he's like, they were calling him like Ensign Hot Pants or something like that early on before we knew what his name was.
I'm trying to remember. I just started
we need to start wrapping things up.
I don't
though,
think we do,
episode.
Though.
So, this is important stuff.
Other things to cover on this one. There was a short nod to magic that makes the sanest man go mad, where. Crit was listing off all of the offenses that Mud is being charged with, and one of them was penetrating a space whale. Which is from that episode, which is that's
you
probably my single favorite one episode of season one.
Oh, same. Like, it's got it's just all around fantastic.
It was beautiful.
Character episode,
it was so well done.
Really good.
Great.
I haven't quite gotten back up to that point on my rewatch, but I'm like savoring that. I'm like, I'm looking forward to that moment.
It's a great one. Anything else you guys want to cover, though, on the escape artist? think we've kind of covered most of our bases on this
one. Yeah, no.
We have.
It was a lot of fun.
All right.
It was.
So we did a poll for this one, as we did for the other three.
Yeah, of course.
You know, for a rating for people. Where would you guys, before I say the results of our poll, where would you guys grade the escape artist on a letter grade scale?
B plus.
Yeah, I was going to say A minus. Like, okay,
well, our Twitter poll doesn't have a plus minus system because you only get four options.
Well,
so
sorry, Twitter sucks.
So are we saying an A and a B then? Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, I'm going to give it an A because I really loved it. I thought Rainn Wilson killed it. The end is not what I saw coming at all.
No.
And it was wonderful. There's so many little nods in there. You've got the one version of Mud that's wearing basically like the naval jacket with the shoulder pads. It looks very much like the one from the original series. So there's a nod there. A lot of fun stuff. I have some gripes about that ship. I'm not super thrilled about the DeMilo because it basically looks like a Crossfire type ship, which there aren't supposed to be any other ones. So, okay. What's it?
Ensign Hot Pants.
Ronnie Rowe. His character's name is Bryce.
Okay.
Bryce, okay. Sorry. He's gorgeous. It doesn't matter what his name is.
Ensign Hot Pants.
Okay. Anyway, so that ship kind of, I don't know, I'm not super thrilled about that because it seems like it's a Crossfire ship from what we were able to see. Now, Memory Alpha denotes it as a Hoover class ship. I don't know where that information would have come from. It must come from something outside of this episode, I would imagine. But it looks just like the Discovery from what I can tell, especially on the inside.
Yeah.
So that's probably my only gripe.
So what were your guys' favorite?
Well, I didn't. Sorry. So the grades on Twitter.
Yeah.
So that's your fault. So 67%. It is 67%. So 2/3 gave it an A.
Mm-hmm.
22% gave it a B. Nobody gave it a C, actually, and then 11% gave it a D or lower.
That's quite an interesting range.
Fair enough. So most people liked it. I mean,
I assume that for all four of these episodes, anyone who gave it a D or below, like, doesn't like Discovery and is like hating.
Yeah, I'm wondering if that's the case because I'm not sure why like none of these were so bad.
No.
That if you were watching it because you were enjoying Discovery, that you would grade these in a D or an F, in my opinion.
Exactly.
Because they're all made well.
This isn't my Star Trek. D. Right? I didn't even watch it, but I hated Discovery, the first episode, and I never watched anymore. D.
Right? I'm wondering if these are the people that review the products on Amazon that haven't actually released yet.
Neckbeards.
You know? Wondering if those are those people. So, I don't know. If you're not, and you really did hate this episode for some reason...
Yeah, please tell us why.
And you watched it. Right. Yeah, let us know. I am curious, because I'm enjoying these, so... I hope they do more. I hope we get, like, a season two of Short Treks.
Yeah.
And we can maybe see more of these characters or more of other characters. I'd like for them to explore that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, any final thoughts on the escape artist?
Nope. Bring on the Red Angel.
All right. Well, then that's going to be it for us this week on Red Shirts and Runabouts, part of the Heroes Podcast Network. You can find us at Red Shirts Pod on Twitter or at Heroes Podcasts on Facebook, Instagram, and heroespodcasts.com. The show is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Blog Talk Radio, and pretty much anywhere that you can get your podcasts. Greg joins me back next week as we kick off Discovery Season 2.
Greg, we miss you.
Zach, how can people find you?
At AvengersES on Twitter, Instagram, social medias.
Ray.
I am Siren Ray on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And I am the Star Trek Dude. You can also find Ray and myself on Screen Heroes, our movie and TV podcast here on the Heroes Podcast Network. Join us for that. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We'll catch you next time.
Red Shirts and Runabouts is part of the Heroes Podcast Network and is executive produced by me, Derek Mayer. Our music is by Flying Killer Robots. Please consider following us on social media at Red Shirts Pod on Twitter or at Heroes Podcasts on Facebook, Instagram, Twitch, or Patreon. You can also go to heroespodcasts.com to find all of the episodes for Red Shirts and Runabouts, as well as the other shows on the Heroes Podcast Network. Please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Blog Talk Radio, Google Play, or anywhere that you want to drop our RSS feed. If you drop us a review on iTunes, we'll be sure to give you a shout-out on a future episode. Thanks for tuning in. Live long and prosper.